Welcome to Finding Joy with Kara. I am your host, Kara Kavensky. Today my guest is Deja Henry, an actress, drama coach, creative, author, YouTuber, and mom. I am excited to share her creative journey with you today.
Thank you, Deja Henry, for joining me today. I'm so excited to have you on Finding Joy with Kara. It's such an honor and it's such a privilege to see you, at least through Zoom today. I'm so excited.
Thank you for having me.
You are so welcome. Please share your earliest memories of artistic endeavors.
Gosh, since I was just a little girl, I've really always been really enthralled with like nature and I guess the interaction of like how I used to feel out there in the nature. And as a little girl, my mom's from Jamaica and my dad's from India, and I've been traveling to Jamaica since I was 6 months old. And I feel like that's like been a big, almost subconscious spark to my creativity. But then I come from cultures that, you know, you tell stories a lot. And so I guess I've always kind of known the power of telling stories. But one thing that my sister, my brother, and me used to always do together is play. It was back in the 80s. So we're playing with Cabbage Patch Dolls, My Little Pony, Legos. Like, you always had to be creative with everything. I was young when we got like a Nintendo, but it wasn't like the main source of stuff, you know, things we did. It was really like, you had to make up your own stories and you had to build things. And I started entertaining my mom's friends when they came over, whether they wanted it or not. I just thought, adults are boring. They're just talking. I need to like invoke some excitement. And so I would just interrupt their conversations with like entertainment and different things. And it was just how I connected with, you know, my siblings. And it's funny because I am kind of a shy and private person on some level, but I feel like I can express myself and my inner feelings through creativity. I was an athlete for a while, but always had this desire to tell stories. And when I was 10, I saw my first movie, which I always feel like when I tell the story, younger people will laugh. Like, you were 10? You first went to the movie theater? But it was just a different time. It was a big deal to go to the theater. And I saw Dick Tracy, and I remember thinking, it was so magical when the lights came down and the picture came up. And I was just like, I want to make people feel not alone.
And that's the one with Madonna.
Madonna, yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, it was 1989 or something like that. And since I loved theater and I loved acting, like, I was a gymnast. So after school, I'd sneak into the theater to watch the rehearsals because I couldn't go because of practice. But as soon as I was able to, I like jumped into the theater, like I met my people, and then I went to study engineering.
Of course, we sell out early.
Right. Yeah. Because I didn't know, like, how does a person even get into the arts and how do they make a living? And my parents didn't know and I didn't know. And I just thought you had to go to California. And I just think it wasn't accessible to me, you know. But as I was there, I'm a person of faith and I began to pray a lot. I just, even though I was a theater or engineering major, I would like try to audition and do any little thing in the theater. Like, I don't care if I just sweep the floor or be in the chorus, or I just would, any way I could get involved. And it was really hard because I'd have 7:30 classes and rehearse till 10 at night, but I didn't care. And then I just would pray and ask God, I think I'm supposed to change my major. And I would pray and pray. And I was so scared of telling my parents, who had sacrificed so much to come to this country. Like, my dad went to Purdue with $36 in his pocket. Like, I still remember this story. And I was like, how can I, you know, this would be such a disgrace, you know, they're going to hate me. But it was not like that at all. I expressed to them what I wanted to do. And my dad was like, okay, you have to do a double major. You have to major in something else. So, like a good immigrant daughter, I listened to my father, and I'm so glad I did. It was very smart. So after school, I was able to, you know, have a job in the medical field. But eventually, I was able to move into being, you know, artist, and this is what I do. So,
well, and speaking of your parents, first of all, you have a very unique dual cultural family, like someone who might be our vice president. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's incredible. So you eventually got back to theater as an adult.
Yeah.
And what form did that take? When did that happen?
Well, in college, like I was saying before, I finally got up the courage to ask my parents if it was okay to switch, and they supported me. But I did do another degree. So I soaked up everything. I was so grateful to finally study what I love. So I did lots of shows at Purdue. Then when I graduated, I got married within a year and started busting out babies right away. It was a different world because I was living in the Midwest. I didn't know how to really get started doing this stuff because I learned the craft, but I didn't learn the business. And at the time, like iMovie had just come out. There weren't any like really DSLRs. People were doing a little bit more independent stuff, but not as much as now. So I would just, I mean, anything I could, I audited a screenwriting class. I even sat outside class with my daughter, who was 2, just to listen to class because her babysitter couldn't come. And I was like, I'm going no matter what. So I sat outside so that I wouldn't interrupt the class with her. And I was just so determined. I really started getting back into theater when I started working with my mother-in-law's mission, which is an urban garden that teaches leadership training to at-risk youth through STEM programming. And one of the students there was shot and killed. He was 13 years old. He was riding a bike. It was a stray bullet. And the children who deal with this a lot, they wanted to have a play in his honor. And they planted a tree and they did all of these things. So I was working at community hospital at the time and was able to bring them on as a partner for the play. And so they actually supported by giving me hours from work to write the play. And so I wrote the play. It was really great. We did it for 4 years. The mayor came. We had hundreds and hundreds of people come to see the show over those years to raise awareness. And personally, I started discovering that I'm most passionate about work that makes a difference. Doing A Song for Peace taught me that I'm most passionate about doing work that has social impact.
Interesting. What other efforts have you been involved in with social impact?
I consider social impact meaning that the audience is empowered to think deeper about the issues in their life and their community. So by that time, I had my 3rd child and I came home from work because they had a lot of health issues and it was becoming overwhelming. I discovered that I was probably dealing with postpartum depression. And I didn't really know that postpartum depression can go up to 5 years after having a child. So I never really had an official diagnosis, but I'd been seeing a therapist and I had dealt with depression in my life. Part of me just kept thinking, I can't be the only mom going through this. There has to be other moms who have these dreams, but they're balancing, you know, their young children. And I remember I went into the bathroom with the children. So I was potty training one of them. And then it was like I was preparing for a breakdown because I just think we're so powerful. So I think I'm about to have a breakdown. Let me situate my children so that I can have the space to cry. So I held it in. I put one on the potty and my son, who was just, he wasn't walking yet. I sat him on the floor and he was playing with my makeup brushes. And I just laid down on the floor in the bathroom. And I've since heard other moms with the bathroom stories. I laid down on the floor and I just started to cry. And I was trying to hide it from my children. And I remember my 2-year-old daughter was just standing, like looking at me, standing over me, like, what are you doing? And I just remember the floor was so cold and my tears were so hot. And then it was like, I had this out of body experience where I just was looking at this whole situation and I started laughing, which outside looking in, you might just see a woman having a breakdown, like laughing and then crying and crying and then laughing. And I was this idea, like sweatpants and high heels. Like we live these 2 worlds, sweatpants and high heels. And I'd never seen a 1-person show, although I've done a lot of theater. And I just like, this is going to be it. This is going to be a show. And from there, I feel like God kind of opened up doors for me to meet people to help me produce it. I was able to take it to New York and show it to a lot of moms. I mean, I'd had husbands coming up to me crying, saying, I didn't know that my wife was going through this stuff. Thank you for, you know, opening the door to let me see what she might be dealing with. And that, to me, that social impact, having moms say, thanks for telling the story. We never hear the story told. We never hear our story told. And in a way, I was able to deal with it and move through my depression through artistic expression. And I feel like it was healing to me and it was healing to those that watched it. And that began, you know, another layer of not just social impact, but healing through using my gift and sharing it with others.
How supportive was your husband, was Darye, during this time? And what type of encouragement did he provide?
I'm very grateful that my husband was extremely supportive. He supported me going to rehearsals and things like that. I still always tried to keep my family first and their needs first, but he was the one that encouraged me to get involved with YouTube. He supported me in making small purchases and then soon buying more powerful computers that could help me with editing. But it was a journey, you know. I wouldn't say it was smooth. Like, we had to learn to work together creatively because I was the one in charge when it came to the theater stuff and film stuff. My husband is a very humble man. Like, he's very supportive and humble, and he doesn't feel like he has to be out there. So I guess that works out good. We're not fighting for the limelight or something, but it was a lesson in communication too, because I had to learn what parts of entertainment was I interested in. I had to learn and grow as a producer, as a businesswoman, and start learning, like, it's not just about the performance. It's about the business. It's about the leadership. It's about the team. It's about so many things. And throughout these last 20 years, we've had our ups and downs, but at the end of the day, we just keep working on our communication.
Oh, that's great. I would like to address the book that you wrote, the I Dare You Not to Compare Yourself to Others. Mm-hmm. And what prompted you to write that book?
I was doing YouTube, and at first it was really, really fun, but you know, as we know, as we've all seen, YouTube has grown and evolved. And my husband had gotten really sick at one point, so sick he wasn't able to work. And I thought, oh my gosh, I need to figure out a way to help. Oh, people are making money on YouTube. So I started looking at YouTube more from the marketing side and all these things and getting a little obsessed about it, to be honest. And I remember seeing another woman who we've talked on YouTube. I think she's amazing, but I literally saw my YouTube colleague go viral and just surpass me just so quickly. I literally was watching her numbers just go up and up and up into the thousands and the multiple thousands into the 10,000s within like 3 days. And at that moment, I realized I had really gotten obsessed. I was angry. I was frustrated. And I realized I'd been comparing myself so much that it was unhealthy. And I wasn't a person who grew up that way too much. But when it hit me, I was like, this is not good. This is terrible. And I think a lot of people know that social media depression is real and comparison and things like that. So my husband also encouraged me to write this book because I was starting to do more speaking gigs, and I had created like a audio lesson on it. And he was like, you need to write a book. He encouraged me. I wouldn't have written it without him.
Well, one of the quotes in it, and it's actually in the preface, is community is what I was craving while I was sequestered to the four walls of my home with my three tiny ones. And this resonates so much today, as much as it did for you in that moment because of the pandemic and because of our circumstances. And I will have the name of the book in the notes for this podcast. Can you please share the resonance of this today and for the past year?
Yes, definitely this past year, we've all been sequestered to our four walls. Thankfully, I think we've had more conversation, and the social media and internet has grown a lot. So the avenues of communication have opened up in one way. And then on the other way, you know, even Gen Z will joke a lot, like, don't send me out there to talk to someone face to face. So it's weird. We have this duality of increased connection and decreased connection at the same time. But yes, I was craving community. I was craving knowing that I wasn't alone, that I wasn't the only ambitious mom out there, that it wasn't bad or something to feel guilty about, that you have these dreams, but you're in the home with the children when they're young. And then last year, the whole world is experiencing these feelings. And on top of it, parents are becoming teachers and having to like find entertainment within the home, and relationships are being stressed. And my relationship with my husband was stressed, and we ended up doing marriage counseling, which was really, really great. I think that this past year was really hard and really wonderful. And like, I think Charles Dickens says, it was like the best of times and the worst of times. I would describe it that way. Doing a lot of introspective work, a lot of healing work, a lot of facing things, I think, as a country that we had to face. And then also tapping back into my creative storehouse and re-inspiring that into the future of creating again. Because I'd just come out of a year of doing a couple films and film festivals, and 2020 was quiet and loud at the same time.
And what type of projects were you able to work on? And I saw little snippets of you through your social media that you were working. There was filming and production happening. So tell me a little bit about those projects and how the set was managed because of the pandemic.
Yeah, in the very beginning, everything was shut down. And then things started to slowly open up. Now there's a new role where it's a compliance officer, a COVID compliance officer on set. So I will be waiting in my car so that there's less people in the spaces. I've been on sets where they're starting to write things just for one actor, that they've been doing post-production work to put two actors together that aren't really even filming at the same time. And for my own work, really officially released it, but I can tell you a little bit about it. It's a conversation around film and the therapeutic themes within it. So it's myself, my co-producer, and a mental health specialist. And we talk about films and movies and kind of things we can learn and draw from them in terms of our society, community, and mental health. We had a very small set. Also, there's lots of hand sanitizer, hand wipes, even the way we eat, everything, no buffet style, everything separate. We've had a few scares where we just shut down production. If anyone's like, my kid was exposed to someone with COVID. So we just don't take any chances. So far, everyone's been safe. And I just booked a bunch of work since this year happened. And I think everyone's kind of in the groove on how to stay safe. Keep your distance, keep your masks on, you're not on camera. Also, I got a grant last year during that time to create a short film around the language of mental health in immigrant families.
Oh, wow. And so who is that grant from? And what is your timeline for that project?
It's through the Clues Foundation, with our fiscal agent being the Felia Haywatt Center. And we will be filming this summer. And I'm really excited because I am really ready to film a comedy after years of working on dramas and deep things. Even though this is a tough subject, we're using comedy to articulate these struggles. And it's been great because my daughter's gonna act in it. And we've been able to have really interesting conversations around mental health and the challenges that she has as a teenager with all of these heritages around her. So I'm excited.
How old are your children now?
So they're much older than Sweatpants and High Heels time. My son is 13 and my daughter is 14. And my oldest is 17.
Oh, wow. So they are definitely stair-stepped.
Yeah.
Are you working with your daughter on other projects? I see that one of your children is an artist. And I would like to mention that Darye is an artist in and of himself with being a musician, correct?
Yes. We eat because of his fractional CTO work. But he is a very, very gifted musician and composer and producer. And he raps, which I love telling people that his band once opened up for Outkast. They once opened for Outkast when Outkast came to Indianapolis in the 90s.
Wow.
So, yeah. But that is the daughter that's the visual artist. She's the actor. And my other daughter, my oldest daughter, is a singer-songwriter. And my son wants to be an engineer.
Oh, really? Well, and Darye is a software engineer. So as a family, do you work on creative projects together? Is my first question. Second one is, through creativity, have not just you experienced healing through that, as you did with finding a creative outlet when you were dealing with a postpartum depression, but have your kids found that to be cathartic?
Oh, that's a great question. So as a family, we support one another on projects over the years. Like one time my daughter, for Sweatpants and High Heels, one of the shows, my daughter actually helped run lights. They have just helped over the years in any little way that they've just been so interested in it. When they were little, they did commercials with me. Sometimes my middle daughter still does commercials with me. Whether my daughter wants to finally sell her artwork, so my husband's helping her with the business side. He does music, so he helps my older daughter learn how to record her music. I think this film coming up is going to be like the first full-on family project. With my last film, Love, Jordan, my daughter was a production assistant. So I don't really force them. I really didn't think I was going to end up with such creative kids, but it's just wonderful to work together. As to your second question, yes, my kids have used art to help themselves heal and process things that especially has happened in the last year around the racial injustice. So my daughter wrote a song after Ahmaud Arbery was killed, and she performed it at our city's Juneteenth performance. She wrote it and performed it, and it's actually up on SoundCloud now. And my middle daughter, she was doing a lot of chalk drawings at Juneteenth concerning some of the people that lost their lives to police brutality. And then she started to sell her work now, which she wouldn't before. So I'm really proud of her because I posted a piece of artwork she did called Black Superwoman. From that, she's been approached to create characters for books and to start doing some commission work, which is exciting.
That's very exciting. And you also are engaged with children in another way, and mm-hmm. that is through some of the camps that you've run. And can you share a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah. I really enjoy teaching kids through my film camp that we do. We didn't get to do it last year because of COVID, but oh, man. Kids are great. They're so creative. They don't have these boxes around them. We do a week-long film camp. I teach them about story, writing. They get to try all the positions on set. The kids love the clapper, though. Like, that's their favorite. to go action, and then they clap the thing. Like, all the kids love that. They're just so creative. And I made a rule for myself never to say no, which is actually a rule in improv. You don't want to say no, you always say yes and. So I gave myself a challenge with the children is if they have an idea to say yes and try to figure out how to make their idea happen. Like one of my favorite stories is one of the young boys, I think he was like 6 or 7, he wanted to turn himself into a puppy because I don't have CGI and we're trying to keep it simple. All the kids brainstormed ways for him to have a transformation into a puppy. And it is one of my favorite parts of the movie. And they should be up on our website or our YouTube channel, but everything's going to get up there soon. But just seeing kids come alive, kids who have been, you know, they have attention issues, have really come alive and found places of focus. Like just when the light bulb goes off, oh, it's just, it's just so cool. I sound like, you know, a teacher for sure through and through. I come from teachers, but it's really exciting. I love it.
What's your advice for parents who've been sequestered with their kids or are still unable to take them out to their usual after school extracurricular engagements that might be indoors? How have you been able to handle the sequestering within your own house, especially during those early days, or suggestions that you have and advice for parents?
I wish I had like the answer, but I can just share things we've done. We have had lots of conversations about feelings before we do like a lot of check-ins with the kids.
That's really important. The conversations about feelings. That's a great one.
Yeah. And we watch a lot of movies we enjoy together. We are a family that likes movies. So those movies help us to start conversations as well. We haven't been able to really go to church. So we were streaming services, but then we started to slowly start asking the kids like, hey, do you have questions about stuff about your faith? And so now we do like kid-led conversations. So one of them asks something like, hey, how do you guys like deal with marriage? And I was like, whoa, if we hadn't given them space to ask questions, sometimes you just never know what your kids are thinking about. I mean, my daughter was asking me questions like how to deal with a friend who was getting on her nerves. And so we just talked about ways to just communicate lovingly about frustrations. So like working on communication and feelings and family, we do family rap battles. Those are my favorite. We also got a puppy and a cat. And I don't know if that was smart, Kara. I don't know, but... definitely keeps them busy.
Well, I think it definitely is a healthy distraction and encourages responsibility and other ways to connect. I think the best thing that happened during the pandemic was the shelter animals finding mm-hmm. new homes.
Yeah. Wow. That's great. And now it's getting warmer. So, you know, we can go back outside and like, you know, have lots of driveway conversations like last year. So,
right. Yeah. The combo, the winter up here in the north with being sequestered, and it's very isolating in a way. So,
but I've been doing a lot of reading. I've been reading about things I've been wanting to learn about and finding online music classes for the kids, and I found little like classes I could take for things I wanted.
I will make sure we have everything included in the notes. And thank you, thank you, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been such a pleasure to catch up and speak with you and find out how we can all express and discuss things during these tough times.
Yeah, thank you so much, Kara. This was great.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me today for this episode of Finding Joy with Kara. In Deja Henry's book, I Dare You Not to Compare Yourself to Others, she quotes Albert Einstein, "Everybody is a genius, but if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it will live its whole life believing that it is stupid." And Deja adds, "What we need to do is find out where we can flourish and work in our own genius zone." I hope you all either already know or will soon discover where your own genius zone is. Thank you very much for listening, and I wish you well along your journey to finding joy.